Web TV Takeover, Part 2. This was recorded at the 8th Chumag Live event, Web TV Takeover, on September the 18th, 2007, in London. Featuring on the panel, Cosmo Lush, Head of Product Development at Channel 4's 4OD service, Raghav Gupta, VP International Partnerships at Brightcove, Paul Pod, co-founder of Tape It Off the Internet, Alexander Cameron, Managing Director of Digital TX Limited, and Alan Patrick, co-founder of Broadsight, with Colin Donald of Futurescape chairing. The event was produced by Chinwag editor Deirdre Molloy, with podcast services provided by Perfect Path Consulting.
Let's just move on, I think, now to the Q&A. We're covering a lot of ground here, but let's hear what you think, or your questions. So,
Alan Richardson, RNICG. Quick question for the panel. Alan, you mentioned traffic shaping, and it's something that I noticed the panel hasn't talked about at all, but it seems like the elephant in the room. I know there's a small broadcaster over in Shepherd's Bush that is about to release an awful lot of content for the market that has the UK ISPs so worried that they're lobbying the government hard. What does the panel think will solve the question of traffic shaping or net neutrality? Will it be market forces or will it be regulation?
Okay, now I know Alex is dying to answer this, but can we keep it fairly brief though, because we don't want to get too much into the technology. Okay. Yeah,
I've been chomping at the bit. About traffic shaping? You know what I mean? First
of all, can we define what traffic shaping is, why it's important, and therefore the
traffic
consequences?
Traffic shaping is when your broadband provider looks at the information that's sent down your line, and if it's from a certain television program or it's from a program like a peer-to-peer downloading program, they'll stop it, they'll throttle it. The reason I'm really, really keen to address this point is because I've been talking about it last week, but today I had a meeting with guys from BBC R&D, which is what we're talking about, and BT Wholesale. And we had this conversation in detail, and it was fascinating. I can't go into a whole lot of the details, but I'm going to tell you this. There's a war on the way here, and the BBC are going to kick it off because nobody can lay into the others. There is another very big ISP I know who I have a chat with. There are four ISPs in this country, or four or five, that control 93 or 94% of the market. All that needs to happen is those guys sit around a table and turn off the video. And they're going to do it, because if you try and do the maths or the economics of sending video down a national network, it doesn't work. It doesn't matter how much you do it. It just does not work. The ISPs are paying the bill for the content owners. And they're not going to have it anymore. They can't kick them in because of all the commercial benefits. But what's going to happen? The peer-to-peer downloaders, the BitTorrent guys, they are going to be kicked off all the ISPs, as they always are, go from one network to another. And ultimately, the strain's going to be too hard. The ISPs are going to kick in and say, no, no more of this. Four of them are going to sit around a table and say, this is it, class action. We're not having any more video in this place. And they're going to go to people like the BBC, like peer-to-peer guys, like 4OD Love Film, and they're going to say, no more video coming down our network unless you pay for the bandwidth. So that's £500,000, £800,000 a year at least, if you see some of the BT economics, which is going to be even more problematic. So once you money comes in through into the bank account, then anyone who has a download cap, that flow of information, whether it be the iPlayer or whether it will go through like direct downloading onto streaming sites like YouTube, will not count towards your download cap. This has been coming for a year and a half. The BBC is the catalyst for this. Tiscalee TV have brought out this and they've shoved it in the news. It's been going on in America for net neutrality. This is, without doubt, the most crucial element to do with anything to do with internet TV right now. And if it's in risk, it's going to die if they carry on.
Okay. Alan, do you want to pick that up?
I think it's going to be... I think that's a good summary of the first shot in the war. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that, because the ISPs can't close it off, because then you potentially strangle the goose that's going to lay a hell of a lot of golden eggs over time. But I think there is going to be a fairly robust debate. It's also going to vary by country, to your question of regulatory versus market forces. You know, different regulators in different countries have different powers. So you know, I can believe in the UK the regulator is going to be far more involved. There's fewer large players on each all sides. Other countries like the US, it's much more dispersed. So I can imagine a fairly strong market force play there, or a stronger market force play there. I think, you know, it's very difficult to imagine that the owners of the distribution sector are not going to want some amount of revenue from this game, because at the moment they pretty much are seeing a free ride. And you're getting the tragedy of the commons effect. They are the commons. Everybody else is upping the ante. So you know, they're getting left with the my pipes are now full, so who spends the billions on upgrading the pipes? And that's the point of where it gets interesting, that, you know, the peak pipe syndrome when my pipes are full.
Okay, Cosmo, Channel 4, you going to pay?
I think most of this has been said. I mean, I can speak about it, or we can move on to the next question. I think it's going to be a long, drawn-out battle. I think every side in the argument has a very strong argument, a very good one. I think, you know, they can try to shut off our content if they like, but I think I would say, why don't you look at all the illegal pirate P2P content first rather than the legal stuff. I'm a goose, hopefully, who's laying golden eggs. It's going to be a long fight.
Okay, next question, please.
Hi, Chris Kaufman from Library House. Cosmo, you mentioned the concept of brand as a service provider, and, you know, there's value in being the distributor of the content as a brand. I wondered if people on the panel had any views about how that shapes out in the internet TV and web TV world, where we've had a proliferation of service providers, so, you know, everything from internet TV brands like Juiced and Babbelgum and Vio, and to all the web TV companies, Daily Motion, YouTube, and everyone else. I think YouTube has built a kind of strong brand, partly on the basis of being a repository for everything, you know, pirated content, anything, so people kind of have a concept that they should go there. But when you actually control the content, it's splintered across all these different services. And from a consumer, I feel like I'm kind of, you know, there's a lot of noise out there. I don't really know where I go for TV on the internet, truly. So I wonder if anyone has any view on that.
Lance, do you want to just go down the line?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I think that's really the battle right now is you know, sort of the hearts and minds of consumers, right? And you know, on the one hand, you might have stores like iTunes and Apple trying to be top of mind there, whereas you have brands and of media companies, of broadcasters like a Channel 4 trying to be top of mind there. And then you've got all the aggregators out there, the social networks, the media sharing sites like you referenced. And I think it you know, from a content owner's perspective, I think windowing there does make sense, where, you know, give your own properties sort of the first, you know, shake at it, unless you get a lot of money to do otherwise. But I think it remains to be seen. The way we look at video over the web is really, I think, obviously there are differences, but we think it'll play out a lot of, you know, very similarly to how the sort of text web and the graphic web played out, right? You still have millions of sites, but you've got a lot of eyeballs and traffic aggregated across some very large aggregators that have lots of services that they've aggregated. They know a lot about the user, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think search is obviously a very powerful mechanism on the text web. I think it remains to be seen whether it'll be as powerful for entertainment-based content. Certainly for informational-based video content, it will show up in search results and do that. But when I, you know, want to watch something entertaining, I don't necessarily know what to search for. I'm more in browse mode and recommendation mode, and that's where recommendations and community are very powerful features, like you see on YouTube, and that's, you know, that explains some of the network effects that they've been experiencing.
For Channel 4, obviously the brand question is our brand, does it continue to be relevant in the internet world where people go to the title of the show and they don't need to know whether it's from Channel 4 or ITV or anybody else? I think it's a good logic to that argument, but I don't think it's a complete story. I think that you know, Channel 4 has an extremely well-funded, very well-oiled, and extremely successful consumer brand that has served it and its viewers extremely well for a long time now. And I don't see why that should go away in the internet world in its entirety. I think that consumer brand is a very important and very useful way or tool to help people navigate their way around an infinite amount of content. So as far as I'm concerned, I think there's life yet in the broadcaster brand. The other thing I'd say is that if, for example, independent producers want to go out and strike their own deals and distribute themselves without any support from a broadcaster, well, that's fine, but for goodness sake, don't underestimate the expense, frankly, of setting up your own consumer brand. Recognize its importance and don't try to do it unless it's sufficient, unless your business model is sufficiently funded, because it's a really, really expensive game, and in many situations, if you don't have that consumer brand, the business ain't going to work.
Yeah, I'd agree with some of that, in that the shows are the new brands, really, in a lot of ways, and it does cause a few problems with things like the international geography of releasing a show in the States and then releasing it here nearly almost a year later. So at the moment you have Heroes, which is halfway through on BBC Two, and the new season's about to start in the States. I mean, you know, you have a real problem there, where the show is more important than any loyalty to watching on any channel. But the channel brands are, you know, incredibly important. They've been around 40, 50 years in some cases. This is big stuff that you can't just wipe away, and it crosses over into where the schedule fits in. You know, people go to a channel brand to experience a certain type of content in a certain order-ish. And if that can be, you know, the same channel brand for me and another person who watches Channel 4 or BBC One or BBC Two or whatever, but they don't necessarily experience the same programmes in the same order, then the concept of the channel still exists. So it can work both ways, and I think everyone's kind of safe, really. It's just more choice, and people make their own decisions as to who they stick with.
Okay, terrific. Have a next question, please. Okay, right there.
Hello. Alan. Sorry. Alan, you mentioned...
Just shout a bit.
You mentioned Metcalfe's law of network effects. And could you explain that more in terms of the short term, the next 5 years of the media landscape?
Okay, the question was, I mentioned that the Web 2 side comes in with really having Metcalfe's law-based networks, whereas the broadcasting side comes in with a broadcast network. And that's actually quite an interesting conflict in the web TV game, because it's sort of navigating between the two. Metcalfe's law is the law that says the more people are connected to a service, the more useful it is, which is great for services like email and so on and so forth. The broadcast law is slightly different. It says that, you know, effectively got a fixed cost of chucking the stuff out, and the number of people I get to connect to it is really my return. Web TV as a service is somewhere between those two. So it comes back to actually the point raised earlier about brands and so on and so forth. If you've got a service which has got a very high switching cost, like an IPTV set-top box service, you're much more interested in amortizing your fixed cost by getting users to consume the content in a fairly faithful way. If you've got a service with a very high, very low switching cost, like a Juiced or a Bagelgum, whatever, you really want some form of lock-in. And one of the ways of doing that is getting a Metcalfe's law, so you have a social network or a community that helps to lock you in there. Of course, one of the lessons from social networks is that it's fairly illusory. People move from Friendster to MySpace to that fairly quickly, so it has to be quite strong to do that sort of thing. I can imagine people going to try and make quite a lot of work around dig-style finding of content, because I think one of the things you're going to find in terms of branding, there's a bunch of brands at the moment which have got their power from scheduling, i.e. I edit the stuff and I put it together and you like what I do. If you look at the internet world, the text internet, it's pretty much more of a search and find what I like, which is much more the long-tail model. And you've got people like, you know, the first step was Google, find it. The next step is something like Dig, which is find it and rate it. And then you find that these things get gamed to hell and gone. So what you're reading off Amazon as a recommendation or of Dig as a thing is not necessarily there. So there's going to be quite a lot of, I think, trust issues with the brands that are around rating. So I can actually see that people with trusted brands now will put some form of editing function in to, if you like, enhance the broadcast model. You know what you're going to get. You like what we choose for you. You can give us some form of feedback. And then you're going to get the other guys trying to come in to rationalize or to tone down the amount of gaming that goes in self-selection models. And those that can do it successfully will also become trusted brands. So effectively, the Metcalfe's law is a battle between, you know, getting a network of users versus the economics of broadcasting. Which, unfortunately, the web TV is a broadcast model. The internet itself is not an efficient way of setting the stuff out, which comes back to the earlier discussion about, you know, premium services or traffic management.
Okay, thanks very much. Next question?
Question for Alex here. Given the legacy telecom infrastructure constraints in both broadband and spectrum to deliver IPTV and video on demand, can you expand on why caching content at the physical edge of the network is so important to deliver?
Do you work at BT?
Last mile.
Oh, yes. That would have anything to do with your product range, would it, by any chance? I like your company. They're cool. I want to hear how you did with the bidding in the US. So I'm going to ask you about that later. Well, let's be honest. BT's infrastructure sucks. I've used that word a couple of times now. It's a nightmare. It's really difficult, actually, in the US. It's, in the UK, it's really prohibitive. Other a good, really good example of this is Juiced, because other countries have got fibre. You know, they've got different economic models where they put flats and apartments together, and it's easier and it's more economical to put fibre optic cable running into flats. France Telecom has a pretty similar infrastructure to us. They're paying about £2 a month or something ridiculous for broadband. BT, I don't know, everyone gives BT a really, really hard time, gives them a kicking, and I'm no exception, so I'm just going to carry on. They're a nice, but I have a lot of time for BT. I think there's a huge amount of politicking involved, but ultimately, no, the network's not good enough. 21CN is late, it is bloated. I know they've got a content distribution program which is under development now, which I'm chatting with them about. Ultimately, when you're doing video delivery, yes, you have to get everything as close to the network, which is why peer-to-peer in itself, it's smoke and mirrors, because what peer-to-peer is doing, and funnily enough, one of the directors of CacheLogic, one of these caching companies and peer-to-peer type distribution companies, told me himself, peer-to-peer is smoke and mirrors, because you are taking the traffic from the center of the network, you're putting it on the edge. You're not getting rid of the traffic, the ISPs are still paying the bill. So ultimately, when you're trying to do video distribution, you're trying to get everything as close to the person as you can, whether you're going to be on the PVR, you'll be on the set-top box, you're going to be in the street cabinet or nearby, but you don't want to have to make video transfer over long distances. You don't want to have to pay for the delivery of it. You don't want to have the delays and everything. The problem with BT's infrastructure, and I think most ISPs who deal with BT are going to say this, they resell BT's infrastructure. So they're ultimately, you're consuming a BT product. People like Tiscali and many others are putting their own equipment into BT exchanges. But the economics are fundamentally, they're awful. They're really, really bad. And they're not getting better with 21CN. And you'll see this is why people rail against them, because there is a monopolist thinking. The only way you get anything done with BT is to threaten them with breaking them up. Ofcom have to wade in. And they'll tell you it's not that way, but they're just behaving any other way a business would behave. We need fiber. We need bandwidth as a commodity. You know, we can run out. They've got to see the fiber that's running under the ground as the new Freeview spectrum. That's what we were talking about today. That was the one thing. Ben Verweyen is very, very clued up on this. The conversation that's been running, nobody knew. Nobody had even told him. Actually, this is the real truth. This is what happens inside BT, right? If you try and get a meeting with BT, it'll take you 3 months. When you put anything paperwork-wise in, it'll get lost in the ether. The engineers will disagree with each other, and eventually things will go nowhere. Brilliantly talented people will come up with great plans, and they'll just fall over, just won't go anywhere. Ben Verweyen said to the BBC guys at this copyright conference, they said, we're going to do multicast, which is essential. It's an essential technology for doing channel TV. And he said, what's that? And the BBC guys, Brandon, some of you are familiar with these, Brandon's a legend at the BBC who has his own room dedicated to him. He's a leather jacket wearing, long-haired guy who puts all the multicast streams up for all the different ISPs. They spent 2.5 hours sort of educating Ben Verweyen about the necessities of how you deliver video over a network. And he got it, and he went crazy. He thought it was amazing. It was brilliant. He got the case, and he's gone crazy. But that's the problem. It's not almost technologies. It's actually getting influence and getting into the people who actually make these decisions to get them to do the business case. And the way you get a business case signed off inside BT is you forget all the costs, and then you add them in later when they've signed it off. And that's what happens with 21CN. If you're an ISP, you're paying £200 per megabit per user per month to transfer video. Juice downloads 240 megabits an hour, right? So that's why the economics don't work. If you want to get into 21CN as an ISP, when you're currently paying 200 megabits or £200, you're going to be paying 75, so it's a great cost saving. What they don't tell you about 21CN is you're going to be paying £10 million up front to connect into BT's network in the first place.
Okay, I'm going to cut you off right there. That's enough bandwidth and technology for now. Let's have another question, maybe something a bit more indie producer, broadcast television oriented. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not one of those, but I have several questions, stroke points. You may have already answered these as I was playing with an iPhone for the last 10 minutes of your presentation. Firstly, I think there's a lot of artificial delineation here. You're talking, essentially it comes down to content, users and screens. And, you know, most people beyond that really don't give a shit. So why are we saying, oh, IPTV and this and mobile and blah, 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 who cares? The 4OD guy, I think, is very interesting. But why would you not want to be on every other platform that's going? If I'm a content owner or a distributor, I'd want to be on every store in the world selling my content. The fact that 4OD is only on 4OD or Channel 4 content is only on 4OD doesn't annoy me. It just means I'm going to BitTorrent to watch something which I missed the night before and I'm not buying it on iTunes. So why do that?
Okay, Cosmo. So I mean, I think you did mention that before, but if you'd just respond briefly.
Looking to strike the right balance between building our own site that can maximize revenue, whether it's from advertising or any other content-related services, and distributing it to get more eyeballs, more views, and more revenue with lower margin.
But you also talked about channel brands and content aggregator brands, and I think in the last certainly 4 or 5 years, those have become virtually irrelevant. What you have now are content brands. You have Spider-Man, you have The Office, you have Heroes, you have the IT crowd, you have whatever it happens to be. And just as most people who buy songs on iTunes don't know who the record company is, most people who download off BitTorrent don't know who the production company was, don't know who the original TV distributor was, don't know who the channel was in America. I don't know who broadcasts Heroes in America. I don't really care. I'm just going to watch it off BitTorrent if that's what I want to do. So I think, you know, creating value as a content brand, as a channel brand, only makes sense. You're only creating value for the people in that company. You're not creating value for end users.
Okay, I went through that point as well, and I think that, you know, what you say is a very logical argument. I just happen not to agree with it entirely.
Yeah, but that's...
And I think we create value for our viewers and for ourselves and for the producers whose content we show on air.
Yeah, I think we've covered that. Can we just move on to the next question, please?
Yeah. Hi. Okay, I'm an independent producer. I'm just about to launch an IPTV channel. I have had business experience in the past, but very little IPTV experience. And what I'm looking for, a cheeky question, is anybody that knows somebody that's very, very good at web development with an IPTV with an IPTV background, please come and see me afterwards. And please come and see me afterwards. This guy here.
This guy with a brown t-shirt, myself.
And that guy, Jesus. Let's do an auction. And the second thing is, my market is going to be very much in the Far East, specifically into India. Thank you very much. Do you have any feel or advice at this point on the Far East and IPTV in the Far East, particularly perhaps the Bright Cove? Because Nick has been very useful to me this morning. He's convinced me to go and use the console. I've just got my console, just screened, done my personalization on my first screen. So thank you, Nick. Bright Cove, by the way, has been fantastic to me so far. So thank you very much. But any opinion on India or Far East? Thank you.
Well, okay. Now you've collected your business cards. Do you want to just tell us what kind of show it is and which IPTV company you want to distribute over? Just to fill it out.
It's going to be the boring end of the IPTV. It's business-to-business training information, education, CEO insights, that type of thing.
Okay, terrific. I think, Alan, you wanted to pick that up?
Yeah, we've done work in India and in various forest countries. I'm glad you said it's B2B stuff, because the big issue you've got in those countries is, although they've got huge populations, the size of the population that can actually afford a lot of this Western stuff is quite small. And the people who do want to see all the delightful consumer content don't like paying for it. And so there's an issue there. There's a generic point about the Far East, which is, it comes back to an earlier point about BT's crap network versus France's and so on. That's settlement patterns. In general, Southern Europe and Far East tend to be concentrated in cities where population density is quite high. If you take Paris compared to London, for example, population density is much higher. So you can stick a line into an apartment and send very high sort of bandwidth pipes in fairly cheaply. when you go to places like the States, where everybody's sitting on their own lots, the economics gets quite a lot higher. So that there is an economic difference. The Far East in the cities is a fairly easy place to get to for IPTV. Elsewhere it's not. But, of course, the benefit is most of the people you want to reach are in the cities and in the corporates. My own suspicion of the Far East is that's a better business model, is selling B2B stuff right now, because although there's a lot of debate of paid for versus free and advertising support, the real truth is advertising is typically a function of a GDP, and in fact the wealth of a person. You know, nobody's going to advertise a huge amount of money to people who don't earn a lot. It's sad, but that's the way it is, whereas businesses around the world need to know things.
The only thing I would add is that Indians are cheap, and I can say that because I'm Indian, so I hope it's ad-supported, not pay-per-view. No, but the one thing I would say is that actually you have to watch out for bit rates and broadband penetration in the country, right? So don't encode it at too high of a rate and so that it sort of hits the right demographic and population.
So does that mean progressive download would be better than streaming for India?
That's what I would do, yeah.
Okay, terrific. Got a question down here?
Yeah, I'm Sean from Digital Outlook. My question, we talk a lot about ad-supported revenues and the way it can actually be the only way to distribute content for free out there. My question would be that my experience, I mostly work for a movie client, and recently, for instance, I released online a trailer for Pirates of the Caribbean 2. With having everyone showing the trailer on their homepage, like MSN, Yahoo, everything, I think it got about 2 million views in about 6 days, which was massive compared to what I usually get. And if I compare that to other movies, which are smaller and less expected, if I get 500,000 trailer views in a week or two, I make jumps, literally. Which kind of tells me, if I compare that to the guys who do PR on TV and can show that to 9 million people on TV in one show, it kind of makes me wonder, when you start doing on-demand, your content starts to be very niche in terms of the number of people who actually view it. And if I see a YouTube that has massive stats in terms of the total number of views, the actual number of views per video, I'm not sure it's going to be that massive. And the thing I'm a bit worried about is, if I'm a producer, I can invest money thinking that the only revenue I'm going to get is from ad support, which is, on a CPM basis, quite low, and in the end, quite a low number of views, because, let's be realistic, the videos that have more than 1 million views, which is not massive, are not that numerous out there.
Okay, so who wants to pick that up? Anyone?
Was there a question?
Was there actually a question?
Yeah. Well, it's really, it's, I know we're all saying that we don't know what the business model is going to be, but at support, I completely understand the view from the point of view from a user point of view. But is there any viable way? I mean, do you see people reinvesting money in producing content just on an ad-supported basis?
Yeah, it's a real, I think that what you're talking to is the issue of scale, right? And where if, you might develop something on the web and just due to the scale you achieve, it's just not enough to move the needle from a monetary perspective. And really, this, any ad-supported business, right, media business, it's a matter of scale and getting the right demographic or audience, enough of them aggregated. And so, a lot of what we call broadband startups that start out, it's very much like a magazine or a cable network where they have to achieve some level of critical mass, where, at which point a CPM-based sort of buy really makes sense, unless they're sort of being aggregated by other people and having other people sell it. So what we recommend, what we find a lot of people doing, is really going the sponsorship model and going to one or two advertisers, getting them a higher degree of integration, entitlement, sometimes even product placement, or some sort of integration within the actual content itself, and doing very well that way. There's a great example in the U.S. Of this series where it was sort of, it was online only. It was called Cube Fabulous, where they would sort of go to your office cube and redo it, just like sort of an extreme makeover, and they would do it in the theme that you like. So if you really like Westerns, they would have sand and everything else in your cube. And they got Staples, I think, to fund it, or Starbucks, and they might have a Starbucks cup on the desk, and it worked out really well for everybody. And so, it's just it is what it is, right? It's the name of the game is volume and getting an audience. And now, of course, if you've got something very highly targeted and highly niche, you don't have to aggregate as many eyeballs there, as long as they're the right ones. And so it's going to vary depending on your content.
I'll just say one other thing on that. I think there's sort of two questions. Do you, you know, can you make more money out of advertising sponsored content or pay-per-view content? I think you've just addressed that. I think the other question, though, is around budgets for commissioning content. And that's more fundamental to both those models. I think one of the problems that we find, you know, coming from the very traditional commissioning and broadcasting world, if we want to do original online content, for example, you know, where's the business? How much money are we really going to make? Does it really make sense for, you know, can we make ends meet? Can we break even on producing a piece of content? And that, in the traditional world, is very difficult at the moment because it's such a new, young industry. So we have to be more creative with ways of funding that kind of content production, just as Rags just identified. So there's a tricky thing about how much money you need to make the content, how much money you're going to make back off it, whichever business model you choose.
I mean, niche content is great as long as it's not too expensive to make, and it falls into the long tail of TV, essentially. And once it's out there on the internet, you need two things. You need decent search to find it, and you need decent signposts to find it. And as long as it's not, it is really, really niche, you'll be fine. If it's a bit broad, it starts to fall down, and you struggle to get either advertisers or pay-per-view. It's the middle ground where things are quite difficult, I think.
I think it's worth pointing out that if you're looking for models in the UK, you could be looking sort of at Where Are the Joneses, which is an interactive sitcom, which is essentially sponsored by Ford as the sole sponsor. Or you could be looking at Kate Modern on Bebo, in which there's full of product placement. You know, so both of those are actually being experimented with already. Alex?
I've got a, I suppose, revolutionary suggestion for everyone in the room. If you want to make more money from advertising and you want more people on your service, make better content. TV sucks. I want to say that again. TV sucks. People aren't taking any risks. I tell you what, the commission I want in front of Cosmo, because he's one of the good guys, and believe me, there are many bad guys. People like Jodie Marsh, who do stupid things about marrying people on TV. What I want to see is a commission. I want to think in front, just saying, ladies and gentlemen, in the next 30 days, we will attempt to assassinate a prominent public figure. That's what I want to see is TV. I want stuff like that. I want things that take risks. I don't want reality TV. It's cheap. It's tacky. I don't want Quiz Call on ITV late at night. I want Heroes. I want 24. I want The West Wing. I want people to put money and effort into programming and not live in an insular TV production community where all that seems to exist is people in black room specs and polo necks discussing the latte they had in Starbucks and what their friends would be watching. It does have to be paid for, but I tell you what, the advertising money. You've got to take risks. Well, that's how the free market works. Sells. People pick it up. It gets advertisers in. It gets people in, and it's risky. We don't take risks anymore, and we need to take risks. And when we start creating really good content, we'll get lots of people on these platforms and using these types of technologies. I know it's difficult. It's not easy. Of course, it's chicken and egg. But if we do like that, we're going to sit around and we might as well just fashion stones and pieces of wood and throw them at each other like we did in Neanderthal Age. I was wondering when you were going to heckle me. Thank you. I love you, Dean. I agree. I mean, this is my point. It's like a revolutionary one. It's very simple.
Okay, I think we had another response down from here.
Yeah, similarly disagreeing that all TV sucks. My name's Kate. I work for a company called Digital Outlook. Not all TV sucks. Aaron Sorkin's TV doesn't suck, and the very good invite to tonight's event talked about a terrible situation in the US where traditional means of measuring ratings through linear broadcast meant that show was pulled by the network, and yet I've been watching it on 4OD. Thank you very much for that. My question is linked back, I guess, to budget and acquisition and commissioning content. At what point do you envisage having your own acquisition or commissioning budget for 4OD? So at what point can we sever the tie of traditional linear broadcast, which does no longer accurately reflects viewing patterns amongst the populace?
Very soon. I mean, I think, you know, if if 4AD has a weakness, how could I say such a thing? But the lack of online original content, I think, is a real gap, and it'll be really fun to explore that as quickly as possible. I think that, you know, we've done a good job of sort of getting out with stage one, which is just to put our TV programs onto the internet. I think we need to do more creative things around integrating long-form and short-form content, for example, clips and full episodes, original content, previews. The list is long, but I think the place to start for us will be if we commission a new series of Skins or Shameless, and this is stuff that we're doing already, to be honest, we'll commission exclusive online content off the back of that, which is very easy, it's very cost-effective, and it can be really fun for people who like those shows. So that's where we'll start, and hopefully it will grow. But it is quite difficult to go out and commission completely new shows and believe that you're going to make good money out of it, or even make your money back.
Okay, time's pressing on, so I think we've got time for two questions. We've got one down here.
Hi there. Hi. Peter Kwong, VCCP. I just heard the word audience mentioned, and I thought it would be a good place to ask the panel what they felt delivering, you know, things in this new world for the audience really means, and how, what kind of commitment you would make. Because clearly this whole new world that we're in means that they are in control. We're no longer in control. Broadcasters are no longer in control. So, you know, the ramifications for us are pretty big. But what do you kind of feel, you know, is the right thing to do by them? And I've got a revolutionary thought, which is actually, what if we didn't have channels? What if we, if it was just totally open access? You'd have to make great content, and great content would rise to the top. And in that way, you would have, you know, probably the best of all worlds. But that's probably not what's going to happen in the short term. So my sort of question to the panel is, you know, what do you think the right thing is to do for the audience, for the people? Because they're the ones who are in control, and they're having a disproportionate effect on your business at the moment.
Okay. Well, quickly, Alan, should we just go straight across the panel?
I think my question would be, who is your audience? I'm sorry to throw it back at you, but the other thing that's happening is one of the audience being put in control is the, there's no longer a mass audience. There's a huge number of sub-segments. So just to make the point, you know, people in this room, by and large, don't like a lot of the stuff that's shown on TV. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who do and are quite willing to watch it and be advertised to. So there is definitely an audience for that sort of content. The point I'd like to make, again, coming up to my earlier point, there's a sort of continuum between the pure broadcast side, which is an EPG-based, we edit it, we, with our brand, tell you roughly what you're going to see, through right back to, you know, to the other side on the internet, which is pretty much you search it, you find it, the Google model. My personal view is that web TV is somewhere between those two. I don't think you can run a pure search routine on video. It's just too confusing. So I think brands are either going to have to stand up to say, we give you a trusted search experience, or they're going to have to stand up and say, when you tune into this brand, you kind of know what you're going to get. On the audience side, you've also got something else, which is how much are you prepared to pay? Very simple. You know, an earlier point, there's a very simple mathematics. If you can make £1 per month out of somebody on a pay-per-view, and the CPM rates for advertising are £1 per thousand, then you've got to have 1,000 viewers to your one. If they're £10 per thousand, you've got to have 100. The difference between £1 per thousand and £10 per thousand is how much higher can you make the probability that somebody's going to buy something from your show. That's all advertisers really want to know. And it's very simple. How many people eyeballs can I get, or how much more can I make the probability of buying it to go? So, you know, coming back to the question, the audiences are splitting, and I think we're going to see services that are focused on niche audiences. There's a very interesting company I saw 2-3 days ago called Jaman, which effectively takes movies that we in the English-speaking world wouldn't see and puts them up as an aggregator, and then people rate them. So that's a classic niche play, you know, and that goes to a certain audience. But it's not a majority. It's probably our sort of audience, but it's not the Coronation Street audience.
You want to? No. Oh, okay, fine. Okay, yeah. All right, last question.
Hi, I'm Rob from Paid Content. I think for the... I'm Rob from Paid Content. Hi. I'm Rob from Paid Content, and I think for the mainstream audience, there's a degree of complexity about internet TV. my girlfriend doesn't know what a BitTorrent is. I've tried to explain to her, but you know, even we in this room needed definitions cleared up at the outset. The main networks each have a different mechanism for getting TV online to an audience, even though three of you use the same underlying technology. So does Project Kangaroo exist? Are you guys talking about interoperability? Because I only need one TV set in my lounge to watch 300 channels. I don't need 300 TV sets. My lounge isn't that big. So are you guys talking about working together on a single unifying gateway to the content, or are you thinking maybe something like Paul's site will come in and be the platform to that?
He's asking about Project Kangaroo, which is something that's been covered in the press a couple of times, which is are all the terrestrial broadcasters getting together to pool their online services to come up with a single proposition? And my answer to that is... I think we'd be foolish if we weren't looking at that, because it's such a no-brainer from a consumer perspective. Yes, of course, people want one place instead of three places. So, you know, we're talking to everyone about all these different business models, and we don't know exactly what's going to work in the end, but we would be foolish if we weren't thinking through the strategy of teaming up. Is it going to happen? I don't know, is the short answer, because I think one of the biggest barriers to that kind of project coming to fruition is just getting those three organizations to work together. And that's a pretty massive barrier. So makes a lot of sense from the consumer's perspective, doesn't make all that much sense necessarily from the competing broadcaster's perspective.
Really, really quickly, about the audience question. A, ask them. B, give them what they want. Second question, in terms of, is there a project coming up? Yes, because someone's just given me £5 million to deliver the biggest and most powerful entertainment system this world's ever seen. So I'm going to, I want to take my email address and I'll show you it. And I'll give it to you between 12 months. That's my promise.
Okay, there we go. You got a scoop. So we can go on with the real business of the evening, which is saying thanks so much to the panel here, so you can get on with pitching to Cosmo, asking Paul where your private content is, and having a fight with Alex. Okay, so thanks to everyone. Thank you.